Okay, topic number three, rebalancing with China and the emerging markets. One of the Solari reports, if you can only listen to a few from the last quarter, you really must listen to the interview that I did with Steve Roach on his wonderful book, Unbalanced. I strongly recommend that to you. It's the best economics business book I've read so far. In 2014, if you look at the history of our relationship with China, we have really engineered a false prosperity in the U.S. where we spent far beyond what we could afford, financed with debt, and a burst of productivity in China. We see, let's just look at some of the statistics. In 2013, the global GDP was about 74, 75 trillion. The U.S. was 16.8 trillion of that amount. China was 9.24 trillion. That's up from 1 to 2 trillion only a decade ago. So explosive growth to get there. Tremendous productivity, and let's just look at what the numbers are. In 2011, the U.S. had 4.5% of the global population, 17% of consumer demand. China and India had 40% of the population, but only 4.25% of the consumer demand. So if you just do a simple mathematical calculation, if we rebalanced instantly tomorrow, on average, we would have to reduce our consumption by approximately 75%. Imagine having to overnight reduce your consumption by 75%. So this process of rebalancing is a serious one. We have to get more productive. We have to reduce consumption. They have to increase consumption and services, lower productivity relative to the, they don't need to lower productivity, but it'll lower as a percent relative if they grow consumption and servicing. But how that's going to happen, there's tremendous opportunity inside of that, but it means a very different United States and a very different global economy. And how we go about doing this is of the utmost importance. Roach goes into it in great detail. One of the symptoms of this sort of rebalancing, you're seeing tremendous tension between the G7 and the other members of the G20 in throughout the globe, and that's what a lot of the tensions are, is this unbearable gap in terms of participation in the economy, and the BRICS being very uncomfortable with continuing to support the dollar system. The Snowden revelations have contributed to that. They've underscored the importance for the BRICS of having independent clearing, settlement, and communication systems. Trying to build those kinds of systems and have them work with dependability and trust, that's a huge, huge job. But we see a tiny first step in the BRICS Development Bank that happened very recently here. And I doubt that that would ever have happened if it hadn't been for the Snowden revelations. So again, it's very interesting to think who facilitated and helped that happen. This is what the G7 has been trying to stop as they bring everybody, including the outliers, into the model. They stopped Libya's African Development Bank. So it'll be interesting to see what happens that will be done to kind of try and sabotage. At the same time, the big, exciting, and unbelievably wonderful secret is there's lots of equity and lots of transactions and lots of trade that wants to happen if it can happen in a much more decentralized and robust way. So we need a lot of these trustworthy systems. And I think just like the BRICS have broken away and started this development bank, you're going to see more and more people doing it because they can't, you know, they can't sit around and wait for the centralized system to squeeze them into the ground. And so as the centralized system tries to maintain control and gets uglier and uglier, we're going to see more of these popping up all over the place like the caddy shack gopher.